Welcome to the Illusion of More podcast series. My guest today is Will Buckley, founder of Fair Play, an organization dedicated to, as the slogan says, supporting artists one download at a time. Will's passion for music began, as it did for so many, in the 1960s, and he started his career first as a clerk at Discount Records in Berkeley, California, and later as a consultant to that retail chain, and even later as the president of an independent label, Coldwater Records in Sausalito, California. In 2011, Buckley founded Fair Play, that's F-A-R-E, Play, and he did so with a desire to influence the conversation about the effect illegal downloads have had on the music industry, and will very likely have on the motion picture industry going forward. Will, welcome to the Illusion of More. Tell me a bit about your background and where the idea of Fair Play comes from.
My career actually started working in record retail. My first job was a place called Discount Records. It was on Telegraph Avenue. It was half a block from University of California. The manager of the store was a fabulous guy by the name of Hale Milgram, who actually went on to become president of Capitol Records at the time that Bonnie Raitt's record came out and was a success for them. So I had spent a couple of years really working in retail, starting out as a clerk, managing stores, ending up being a consultant for Discount Records, which was actually a chain owned by CBS Records. Mm-hmm. And a couple of things that really have resonated with me is the fact that the record stores are gone. When I was back in San Francisco a year ago for my son's wedding, the number one place I wanted to go was Amoeba Records on Haight Street, and which is still a very vibrant, very large record store with a lot of energy in it, a lot of people who love music, a lot of diversity. And I remember taking my girlfriend there, and she was going, well, why do you want to go to a record store, you know, in San Francisco? And I said, well, you know, let's just, you know, come on, let's just go check it out. She had the greatest experience along with myself. That by the time we left, we spent about a couple of hours in there. They have a tremendous LP selection in there. Mm-hmm. She said, can we come back here before we go back to Florida?
Right.
And I said, absolutely. So I have a real passion. This is all rolled up with me because I really grew up in a time when music was really everything. And we were changing the world. And it was just a whole part of my life. And I took a look around and saw what was going on in terms of this, which what I think is a disconnect with people, particularly young people, that, you know, this is a new way that artists get started and, you know, and selling music really isn't important. Artists can make money by touring. All of this disinformation that has been very effective in influencing so many people into thinking that illegal downloading is really just the way people get music and don't think about the fact that they're really supporting criminal enterprises. And I don't want to criminalize the person that downloads music because I don't think that is a crime. But the people who operate these sites, these are for-profit sites. These guys are making a lot of money through advertising, upgrades, and subscription sales.
So what is it you want to accomplish with Fair Play?
My real goal is to create a community for artists, and it's not just music. One of the things that's different about Fair Play is the impact of illegal downloading isn't obviously just with musicians. It's with filmmakers, it's with authors, it's with artists. Everybody's being impacted by this. And I'm trying to create a community. I'm going to create a community where people feel comfortable in actually standing up and telling their fans, because what I'm really creating is a social media play. And what I mean by that is this message has a lot more impact. And the message really is about supporting artists, the value of supporting artists. It's artists coming out and saying, wait a minute, we're not these rich people that they love to portray us as. Most of us have second jobs. We're trying to survive. And in order for us to survive, we need your support. And this is a message best presented by those who are the creators directly to their fans, much more powerful than a message coming from me. 10 years ago, when this whole thing started with Napster and Lars Ulrich from Metallica came out and spoke about it, they savaged him.
Right.
And it was so intense and so vitriolic that even today that is emblazoned into people's memories. And literally the artistic community is afraid and uncomfortable in standing up and speaking out for themselves, because their fear is that they'll be painted as some kind of corporate lackey. Mm-hmm. And there'll be a negative spin, and it will hurt their careers.
Sure, we encounter that all the time. You know, and one thing I try to remind people about, including independent artists, is that, you know, regardless of the pros and cons of the big corporations, be they labels, studios, or associations like the MPAA, at the policy level, who else is it that's going to be fighting these kinds of battles? I mean, it isn't going to be the individual artist versus, say, the Internet Association. We just don't have that kind of leverage.
You know, you bring up an interesting point, David. I don't know if you saw the John Mellencamp post in the Huffington Post week or two ago.
Yep.
And I've made actually there are almost 1,000 comments on that post. And part of what I'm doing right now, I'm starting to go through every comment on there and take a look at the temperature of today in terms of what the pushback is for John Mellencamp standing up and saying, you know, a lot of things that I believe in. And one of the trends that I'm seeing a lot in the comments there is, you know, what they're saying is, well, John Mellencamp works for a record, you know, he's part of the industrial complex.
Right, he's the man.
Yeah, he's releasing, well, but it's less so a scathing toward him. It's more so, why should we support the record labels, because they screw artists?
Right, and it's a strange logical leap that really, in my opinion, amounts to a justification. You know, people say things like, well, I heard Warner Music screwed this guy over, and therefore, you know, it's my right to download whatever I want for free. It doesn't really actually stand up as an argument. But, you know, it's funny, as a parent of three, I definitely recognize this as a kind of common, for want of a better way to put it, juvenile rationale, the bottom line of which is, well, I want what I want, so give it to me. But the point is, we are dealing with psychology here, and we're dealing with a generation gap as well. And, you know, I wouldn't be surprised, Will, if people in the younger crowd, you know, people in their 20s will say to you, you know what, you had your experience with music and your social revolution in the 60s. This is ours, and you don't understand it, so back off. How do you answer that?
Well, you know, that's a good question, and that is something that is part of what we're going to incorporate into the program, and that is, peer-to-peer communication is far more powerful than someone like myself, who is definitely not in their, a teenager or in their 20s or 30s, unfortunately. Mm-hmm. And so what we've decided to do is target the performing arts schools, the magnet schools, where kids are getting an education basically to someday to either be a set designer, an actor, a singer, a dancer, a musician. And it's amazing, given what's going on in the world, that these schools are becoming very popular. There are a lot of kids that want to pursue being in that business. So my sense is that these people are predisposed to this discussion. So just mobilizing those thousands of performing arts schools and colleges and getting those kids on message, communicating out to their peer group is going to have some impact. The real answer to your question, David, is how much impact can we have doing what we're doing? And my answer to that is some.
Right.
This is certainly not a solution to the problem in any way. But if we can get to a place where at least kids are being real about the choices that they're making, at least if we get that into their consciousness, that's a big step forward right away. And I do believe that there are a lot of young people, if they really understood the dynamic of what they're doing, because really what they're doing is they're killing the legacy of the creative arts for their future.
You know, I've heard more than a few independent musicians and some filmmakers, but it's still mostly music right now. They'll say to me, you know, I'm not worrying about illegal file sharing. Piracy, I'm past thinking about it. I can use the technology to connect with my real fans, many of whom really do pay for the music. I can make a decent living, and it's just not worth looking back anymore.
Well, I think it's an interesting question, because if you look at people like Annie DeFranco, who was early into this game, and Natalie Merchant in the same way, that made a decision, as did Trent Reznor, who now is back with a major label,
right?
Which I find very interesting. People can be successful from that way. What it comes, really, you bring up the most, I think, salient point of all in this whole discussion, David, and that is, it should be a matter of choice. Mm. And the choice shouldn't be made by the people who operate the ISPs. It should be made by the artists themselves. So those artists that have found a way to be successful, having their music pirated and going out into that world. And most of those are bands that now are making, that are successful as touring bands. But there are not a lot of bands that go out and play that can be successful doing that on the road. And so to me, it comes down to free can be a fabulous marketing concept. And it certainly works for a lot of people. It really, though, needs to reside with the person that creates the art, not somebody else.
You know, and that is a central point about copyright that is completely lost in all this. You know, while the industrial titans are doing battle, we tend to forget that the first principle in copyright really is to grant the author that very choice that you just described. But anyway, back to fair play. You want fair play to be more than just about music, right?
Basically, I see music as kind of like the front line guys that go into battle, and those guys are all taken out. And behind them are the cavalry. And the cavalry is the film business.
Yep.
And the film business, to my thinking, they don't have an opportunity to make money other than they got one shot. They release a movie, and either people go to the theaters, either people buy the DVD, either people pay to stream it, whatever it is. That's a one-shot deal. That doesn't happen for them. They basically have a wholesale loss. And Uncle Johnny that lent the kid $50,000 to make the movie is not going to do that. There are going to be fewer of those people doing that.
That's right.
And as you pointed out so insightfully earlier, they're not going to have that second shot at doing something like that. And the only thing that's really saved the film business from the carnage that the record business has experienced is the fact that high-speed broadband is something that has only been a reality for the last 5 years.
That's exactly right.
And aside from the BitTorrent model, there really hasn't been a way to easily access film and download it in the way there has been with music. So in some ways, I think that what's going on will be even more devastating to the film business, the filmmakers, than it is to the music world. Because you can go into your garage with a computer and knock out a song in 3 hours. Very, very difficult to make a film without some level of crew, cameramen, time involved. There's a lot more infrastructure involved in making a film than there is in recording a song. So I think that in some ways the film business has the most at risk.
You make exactly the right point with regard to film. The music industry certainly entails quite a number of middle-class skilled labor jobs, but we can multiply that by, 100 when it comes to filmmaking, because even a relatively small low-budget feature requires quite a number of skilled professionals. And these are people who work for wages. They do not have an ownership stake in the final product, but they're often good wages. And I do find it astonishing that, you know, college kids who might even be film majors right now and are hoping one day to have one of these jobs are at this very moment on torrent sites downloading motion pictures for free. So I think you have the right idea about reaching out to this sector of higher education. And in that regard, what are your immediate plans to do this?
There's a regional program. West Palm Beach County, and I don't understand why, Florida has a great deal of film available through their colleges, through their schools, through their magnet schools. And I see that as a place for us to begin. So there are approximately 10 schools and colleges just in this county that have a major part of their curriculum centered around the performing arts. And so this is where we're going to be rolling out a program this year, actually going into those schools, talking to those kids, and trying to develop a template that we can push out nationally for people in other cities to implement and take into those schools. So that's very much a project that we have. We're trying to put together a contest, actually, in the schools to encourage kids with some kind of a financial prize to actually create the kind of videos that we're talking about. You know, kids actually sitting down and talking about their passion, about wanting to be a filmmaker, about wanting to be a musician, and about the challenges they face, staying away from the conversation about stealing and illegality. Mm-hmm. We don't want to go there with that conversation. Where we want to go with that is an enrolling conversation about, we really need your support to do what it is that we want to commit our lives to doing.
Right.
And that's the message that we're shooting for. And those are the people that we need to sit down with, and they have, you know, it has to be sincere. I mean, I can't hand these guys a script and say, this is what I want you guys to say. But I need them to those that understand what it is we're trying to do and naturally support it, get involved.
So what's next? What is the status of Fair Play, and where is it heading?
Well, probably the biggest thing that happened for us is I got an email from David Lowery about 9 months ago.
Right.
And I post quite a bit on Digital Music News, which I think is one of the more interesting music oriented sites in terms of the things that Paul Reznikoff deals with. And basically, David sent me an email saying, I'd like to talk to you. I like what you've been saying out there. And that has developed into a relationship with a tricordist. So Fair Play has now become actually kind of the more public face of the tricordist. We're their, if you go to their site, we're their Facebook page, and we're working with them. And it's a gift, not only because I think that the writers for the tricordist, including David Lowery, are some of the most brilliant people writing on this topic today, far more intelligent than I am in terms of dealing with the details. And so that relationship alone has really given me a lot of belief in that we can take this to the next step. And I realize that for Fair Play to be successful, I really need to enroll people and get people involved that have the talents that I don't have to grow this thing. And also, we are currently looking at alternative financing opportunities and partnerships and things of that sort.
And you're hopeful that you can have an influence here, that this isn't just, forgive me, spitting in the wind, as it were.
You know, it's not going to be an easy road. We're certainly not going to change this dynamic. But if we can impact tens of millions of people to at least have the consciousness of the value of supporting the arts and the value it brings into their life, we'll move the needle a little bit.
Yeah. Will, I want to thank you for taking the time to talk to me. Listeners can visit fairplay.org, that's F-A-R-E, Fairplay, and you can follow Fairplay on Facebook and Twitter. Thanks for listening.